It's 7:44 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. This morning, a conversation about criminal justice reform.
The barriers to people who are released from jail are often insurmountable. Barriers to employment, housing, transportation, food. We have a long way to go.
This is West Virginia Morning. Some lawmakers this session are looking at ways to address an overcrowded prison system and help more previously incarcerated people re-enter the workforce. Last year, several groups and nonprofits went around the state to gather testimony and stories from over 200 people about their experiences with the criminal justice system. Their stories were collected through interviews, surveys, and focus groups. Lyda Shepherd works with one of the groups spearheading the project, the American Friends Service Committee. Shepherd sat down with Roxy Todd to share some of the results.
What were some of the themes that emerged from what people talked about?
We definitely heard a lot of trauma. I think as a society, we want to think, we fall into this trap of thinking that people who are incarcerated, we look at them through this one-dimensional lens of they are, quote, a criminal, or they are a felon in the case of people who are formerly incarcerated. And what we heard a lot about was people who had very complex lives and had really complex challenges growing up.
And how does race and things like implicit bias factor into how people are treated by the criminal justice system in our state?
Looking at the numbers of the demographics of our prison system, there is no doubt that there is racial bias at every point of the system, from policing to arrests to who gets sent to drug court or drug, you know, sort of diversions as opposed to being sent to incarceration.
So the type, the people that are often offered this opportunity for treatment as an alternative to being sent to jail or prison are often white, and the people that are of color often just get funneled into the prison system.
Yep, and I think it also shows up even in sentencing, the length that somebody is sentenced. So really at every single point, you see the racial bias show up. The numbers bear that out. And then as far as women incarceration, I mean, that's a sector of the population that has just steadily climbed. We are incarcerating more women in this state year after year over the last decades. And that is in part attributed to, of course, the opioid crisis and just everything that occurs around addiction in West Virginia. And I think, too, it's also attributed to women actually being perceived differently by judges, and that there is actually a real bias, gender bias, when sentencing occurs. It's a little counterintuitive. You would think that women would be maybe let off more easily. But what we actually see is that women are actually sentenced more harshly. And I think part of that is because, quote unquote, bad behavior amongst men is a little bit more expected and therefore a little maybe more acceptable. A woman being brought before a judge for the same crime is actually sentenced more harshly.
That's fascinating and heartbreaking. What did you hear about the types of ways that people are treated when they're children? I know we have a high rate in this state of children being suspended mm-hmm. or being put into some type of juvenile justice situation. Mm-hmm. What did you hear about how people are treated as children and how that transforms into their adult behavior?
We heard a lot about, you know, you're listening to people's stories, and often when you ask someone to tell their story, it starts in childhood. And so I think there was a clear track where people talked about how situations that occurred in their childhood that led them to acting out in school, that led them to getting expelled or suspended, led them into the juvenile justice system. And we know that if you are in the juvenile justice system, your likelihood of ending up in the adult criminal justice system is very, very likely. The first point of contact that kids often have with the juvenile justice system starts in schools. They end up in the juvenile justice system because of truancy, because of these really low-level status, what are called status offenses. And we are not equipping schools as much as we should be to really deal with the complex issues that these kids are facing, that they're coming into school every day bearing a lot of weight of trauma, of adverse childhood experiences. And so I think really having those services in schools, I think would really go very far to keeping kids in school, not expelling them, not suspending them.
So what happens next? What types of changes out of this project could occur?
Well, with, you know, it's legislative session and the legislature is really taking a pretty careful look at how we can address and reduce incarceration. I think there is sort of growing consensus that this is a really expensive way of dealing with very complex social problems. So we're seeing an effort to look at our money bail system so that people aren't being held in regional jails who have not been convicted of a crime but simply cannot afford to make bail. There's also an effort to basically look at our parole system and make sure that people are being released earlier who, you know, pose no threat to public safety, who have really, who once they are parole eligible, they are paroled, and that we are providing as much support to them upon release. Because definitely one of the things we've heard over and over again is that the barriers to people who are released from jail are often insurmountable. Barriers to employment, housing, transportation, food. And while we've been tackling some of those barriers, we have a long way to go.
That was Lyda Shepherd with the American Friends Service Committee, speaking with Roxy Todd. Shepherd was one of the people involved in the Criminal Justice Listening Project, which compiled the testimonies of people across West Virginia. The majority of those interviewed have experienced incarceration or have had family members behind bars. Democratic U.S. Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia is proposing a resolution that would censure President Donald Trump over the president's actions toward Ukraine. Dave Mistich has more.
As President Trump's impeachment trial winds down in the Senate, lawmakers are taking the opportunity to give remarks outlining their thoughts on the process thus far. On Monday, Senator Manchin criticized those who voted against hearing from witnesses. He also announced his desire to reprimand the president through a censure resolution.
History will judge the Senate harshly for failing in its constitutional duty to try this case and do the impartial justice to defend the Constitution and to protect our democracy.
Senators are expected to hold a final vote Wednesday on whether to convict or acquit Trump on two articles of impeachment. A two-thirds majority is needed to remove a president from office, but with Republicans holding 53 seats, a conviction remains unlikely. Manchin says he remains undecided on how he will vote. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich.
On last night's episode of The Legislature Today, we highlighted the multiple challenges West Virginia's active military members and veterans face, and some legislation that may address some of the concerns. Host Suzanne Higgins spoke with Senator Ryan Weld, chairman of the Senate Military Committee, and Senator Doug Faismeyer, a longtime member of that committee. Here's an excerpt from the interview taped live at the Capitol.
Senator Weld, let's begin with you. I'd like to start very broadly about those issues that military families, veterans face that non-military families just cannot really comprehend.
I think that the first thing that I would point out is the responsibilities that are put on these individuals, sometimes the burdens that they bear. Veterans make up about 1% of our population, but make up about 19%, tragically, of all suicides committed in the United States. And so that obviously means that there's a burden being placed on these individuals. And how can we find those people and get them the help that they need? And I think that's one of the biggest challenges that they face, but that we face in having a responsibility to people who have been called to serve in a war that they didn't ask for, but have been a part of.
Senator Faismeyer, you know, these issues of suicide, of drug addiction, homelessness, mental illness, These challenges are faced broadly in our population, but when it comes to veterans and active military personnel, why and how is it important to look at these crises through the lens of military experience?
You know, first of all, I think as a country and a government, we owe it to these folks who put their life on the lines, not only for the active members, but for their family. It's one thing thinking that your dad's going to work today and you hope everything's okay and you'll see him this evening. It's something else if your dad or your mother is going deployed and you're not going to see for months and you have no idea what they're going to face and when they're going to come home and the shape that they're going to come home. And you know, to think about the stress and things that these people go through, and another thing I think it's very important to remember is they volunteered. You know, they love this country enough that they volunteered to go and serve. So I think as a country, we owe them everything that we can. It's just remarkable the sacrifices that these folks make as well as their families.
You know, Senator Weld, we work out of this area, and I had a couple people ask me, as they do every day, what's on the show tonight? And I said, military and veterans issues. And they kind of looked at me like, why? It's really not on our radar day to day. And to state the obvious, we're at war, and we have been, and we have West Virginia citizens over there. And as you pointed out, they volunteer, and many of them are 18, 20, 22 years old. It's just not as a part of the conversation to the extent that it should be.
Yep, and it really does need to be, because we have asked so much of so many people going back to when we started our involvement in Afghanistan back in 2001. Then we started our involvement in Iraq in 2003. And so starting at that point in time, moving forward, we have people on a forward deployment operation in places like Syria. We saw a couple years ago, unfortunately, where four members of our armed forces lost their lives in Africa. I mean, we have people that are, you know, a part of operations all over the globe. And so what we can do back here is just keep that in mind as we try to find ways to allow for the state to offer better services to them and allow for us to recognize the cost that they've endured through things that we can do. And I feel that it's the least that we can do.
This year, Senator Weld, you have passed the Green Alert program. Tell us about that.
So the Green Alert program operates almost exactly like the Amber Alert or the Silver Alert for senior citizens, in that it operates for active duty members and veterans who are at risk because of a physical or mental condition that is linked to their time in service. So if they go missing, how are we going to better track them? How are we going to be able to find them better? And it goes to exactly what the Amber Alert program does, by getting the information out to law enforcement, to the Turnpike Authority, to be on the lookout for this individual and the vehicle that's associated with them because they're deemed to be at risk because of an issue from their time in service. Wisconsin was the first state to do this, and I think that if we implement it here, I think it really could help some people who are considering maybe hurting themselves or others.
Senator Faismeyer, another bill that got through the Senate provides continued eligibility for developmental disability services to dependents of military members. Why was that important?
Well, it's a family deal. And when someone in your family is involved in the military, regardless of what, the whole family is involved. And I think that it's important, and also I would hope that it would also give our active duty men and women a little bit of encouragement or maybe some peace of mind, knowing that if something happens to one of their family members, that there's people back here trying to help. And I think that's important. One of the greatest things about West Virginia, I believe, is our love for our family and trying to do what we can for our family. And I can only imagine what it would be like to be over there. Just to think about your kids being back here and you not being there, anything that we can do along these lines, it's our obligation and we owe it to these people.
That was Senator Doug Faismeyer, member of the Senate Military Committee, and Ryan Weld, chairman of that committee, speaking with Suzanne Higgins on the legislature today. Visit our website, wvpublic.org, to hear the full interview. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Our news director and producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.